Friday Daily Delivery. I am Michael Rand. Glad to be back for another day. Hope you guys are having a great day out there. It's always a great day when there's a Game 7 on the horizon, and there is one in Wolves versus Nuggets going back to Denver after the Wolves completely obliterated Denver. 115-70. It doesn't even sound real. 115-70 on Thursday night. Couple days off now before the final game of that series in Denver. I'll talk a lot about that here in just a minute. Plenty of other good stuff on the show. Kent Youngblood from the Star Tribune joins me here in just a little bit to talk Lynx, talk WNBA. Lynx have their home opener. They take Target Center center stage tonight against Seattle. They already won their opener of the season in Seattle a few nights ago. Kind of a new look Lynx team. Kent and I will get into that. We'll get into the WNBA as a whole, which is seeing a surge in business, seeing a surge in popularity, the Caitlin Clark effect, although Clark struggling early on, maybe not a surprise, but struggling early on, the number one overall pick. Indiana 0-2 on the season. They got blown out last night. Clark struggled. She had 20 points in her first game, but 10 turnovers last night. Didn't shoot very well. Held to just 9 points. So a little bit of an adjustment for Caitlin Clark. But again, not completely unexpected given how good this league is. Kent and I will get into all that here in just a little bit. Got to talk Twins. Patrick Royce did a great column just detailing their offensive futility against the Yankees. 26 consecutive scoreless innings, 378 pitches without a run, and getting swept at Target Field by the Yankees. Three beautiful days for baseball, but not beautiful baseball by any stretch of the imagination for the Twins. And we'll get to PWHL Minnesota, which has a deciding game tonight as well. It's a Game 5, not a Game 7, but those deciding games are just as important. First, though, what did I miss? Like I said, we're going to talk a lot of Wolves at the jump here, just because that's what is warranted right now. Everybody in a great mood right now. And listen, NBA, you know, this is kind of a cliche, but longtime basketball writers, especially NBA writers, will like to say that the NBA basketball is a game of runs. We joke about that on, you know, in the media, on press row, when we're covering games, things like that. We'll say game of runs. If a team is kind of, you know, if it's a back and forth game, it's just kind of like something we say to kind of note what kind of game it is. I turned the game on. I wasn't there last night. I turned the game on. We had a big festival celebration at one of my kids' schools. So we were at that. Walked home from that, got home. I turned the game on. It had just started. Denver was up 9-2. Game of runs, right? Denver starts the game on a 9-2 run. Actually, 9-0 after the Wolves scored the first bucket. So Denver starts the game on a 9-2 run. And you're thinking, okay, here we go again. That was my sentiment. Here we go again. This is not going to go great. Wolves had already lost 3 games in a row. And this was going to be it, right? This was going to be the end because the momentum was just gone. Denver had figured this thing out, and away we go with it. So I was like, okay. But then Jaden McDaniels hits a corner three, important shot. He looked like he kind of hesitated on it a little bit, but he took it, kind of rattled in, you know, just wasn't pure swish, but it went down 9-5. Next thing you know, the Wolves finished the game on a 113-61 run. 113-61. And joking aside, you know, their run was like 20-0 after that 9-2 start. They got contributions up and down the lineup. They figured out their energy. They fed off of it, and away they went. Jaden McDaniels started it. He was great during the run. He was great during the whole game. Anthony Edwards was terrific. Mike Conley Jr. coming back from his injury, his calf/Achilles injury. He was fantastic in this game, giving them that kind of steadying influence. Karl Anthony Towns didn't have a great offensive performance, but he was very good defending Nikola Jokic, and he made the right plays primarily, stayed under control. Rudy Gobert was good. Naz Reid hit some shots. Kyle Anderson had some moments, especially when things were kind of stagnating a little bit. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, they emptied the bench with like 8 minutes left in the game. That's how lopsided this thing was. The lead got to 50 at one point. They finished up with a 45-point win. Not something I think any of us saw coming. But then again, this is the nature of this series, right? It is completely unpredictable. You would not have guessed that the Wolves would win the first two games in Denver, especially the second one, which was a 26-point blowout. You would have not have predicted then that Denver would come back to Minnesota, win the next two, including a blowout in game three by 27 points. You might have guessed that Denver was going to win game five based on that momentum back in Denver. That was maybe the only predictable game in this series, but it's been a weird series, right? Like it's going to a game seven, and I'll get to more of the history of that in a minute, but it's going to a game seven without there being a real classic in this series. Game one was probably the best, most competitive game in this series. It was pretty close most of the way. It was virtually tied with like 5 minutes left, but the Wolves kind of pulled away from there. And the closeout of the game was relatively routine. There was no drama. There was no last second shots. There was no last second stops. It just kind of like cruised it into a 7-point win from there. But that was definitely the best game of the series, because after that, you had the blowout for the Wolves in game two. You had the blowout for Denver in game three. You know, game four was relatively competitive, but Denver kind of put that thing out of reach for all intents and purposes with that bizarre stretch at the end of the first half where they turned that 7-point lead into a 15-point lead when the Wolves just couldn't get out of their own way. And then, you know, Wolves would make little mini runs, but then Jokic always had answers for that. Same with game five. Denver just kind of kept the Wolves at arm's length. And then, of course, last night, another blowout, this one of epic proportions, you know, one of the biggest blowouts in the playoffs, one of the biggest blowouts in an elimination game in NBA history. So there hasn't been like that classic, like nail biter kind of game. And I have no idea if we're going to get that in game seven. I would imagine you would get both teams' best effort, which you haven't gotten in every case this year, this series, obviously with half of the games being blowouts. You know, you see both of these teams have had their struggles to maintain energy, to maintain focus, to maintain composure. I have no idea. That's kind of the theme here. I have no idea what to expect in Game 7. What I do know is this. They are going into this game with the possibility of advancing. They are going into this game with a distinct possibility, if they win, of having home court advantage in the next round, because Dallas now up 3-2 on Oklahoma City. Dallas, the 5 seed, they beat the Clippers, the 4 seed in the first round, and now they have Oklahoma City on the ropes, although that series, as we know, far from over. Oklahoma City could certainly win Game 6 and Game 7. They were the number 1 seed. Younger team, maybe it'd take them a little bit longer, but Dallas has the chance to get through that. So the Wolves have a chance here if they can win Game 7 on Sunday. A big if, a big ask. Again, especially since we don't know what's going to happen. We can't predict this series, but I would give them a pretty decent chance in that next series if they can get through this, even if it's Oklahoma City. I'd like them in either of those series. Obviously, Dallas would bring Kyrie. They'd bring, you know, Luka, all that stuff. Oklahoma City a little bit more well-rounded, and of course they have SGA, who's been tremendous this year. But getting ahead of ourselves, but just saying the opportunity is there, right? The opportunity is there. What we don't know is how they're going to look. They are such an energy team. They are such a flow team, and Denver has been that way too in these playoffs, and especially in this series. So I think we'll know relatively early, maybe not at 9-2, because we didn't know at 9-2 in Game 6 how this thing was going to go. But we'll know relatively early what kind of game we are in store for. I would guess it's going to be somewhat more of a back-and-forth, close game. Hard to imagine one team just gets its doors blown off in a Game 7. But you never know. I mean, both of these teams have had their spirits broken at individual moments in this series. And if one thing is snowballing on Sunday, you could imagine that. Now, we won't know game time until we find out the result of Knicks-Pacers. Could be an afternoon game Sunday, could be a night game, depending on the outcome of Knicks-Pacers game 6. So that will have an impact on your viewing. But Wolves have only played in one Game 7 in their playoff history. Of course, that was Wolves versus Kings back in 2004. Interesting bit of history. This Game 7 in Denver will fall on the exact 20-year anniversary of that Game 7 against the Kings, also was in the Western Conference semifinals, was at Target Center, not on the road. So the Wolves did have the home court advantage in that game. KG's birthday. It was KG's 28th birthday on that game night, which means this is his 48th birthday on Game 7 on Sunday. A little bit of Wolves history there. Speaking to that game a little bit, I was there for the game 20 years ago. I was helping cover it with the Star Tribune, doing sidebars, additional coverage, things like that. Tremendous game. But that was the game. The Wolves won 83-80. That was the old NBA, 83-80. Although, hey, you know, maybe Denver would love to score 83 based on how they've gone, how they went on Thursday night. But 83-80 was the final. That was the game to me that turned Kevin Garnett from a star or a superstar into a Minnesota icon, that cemented his place a little higher echelon in Minnesota sports history. Because a lot of the KG narrative early in his career was he didn't get it done in the clutch. And if you remember, they had lost seven straight first round series before that, starting in 1996 through 2002. So the 96-97 season through the 2002-2003 season, they had lost seven straight first round series, hadn't even gotten things to a game seven. I mean, a lot of those were game fives back in the day before they switched that up. They had made it to one game five in a best of five early on against Seattle. That's how long ago that was. But Wolves got to that game seven, and KG that year had elevated his game. He'd become more of a clutch performer, and in that game goes for 32 points, 21 rebounds, 5 blocks, 4 steals, a couple of assists, plays 46 of the 48 minutes. The Wolves win 83-80 when Chris Webber's last second three goes in and out. Looked like it was in. I was there. It looked like it was going to go down. It did not go down. Wolves win. Jubilation. KG jumps up onto the scorer's table. There's a classic picture where Sid Hartman is in the background, kind of like standing back, like, what's happening here? KG on the scorer's table, going bonkers. And then, of course, Sam Cassell gets injured against, you know, before the Lakers series. They, you know, he plays a little bit in that series, but they end up losing in six. Don't make it to the finals. That was their last great team before this season. So what does this mean? This means Ant has a chance to elevate himself here. He's already elevating himself to new heights. He was really good again last night, under control, good energy. He has the right mindset to be great in this Game 7. In fact, I want to play a little clip of him from Thursday when he was asked about the opportunity to play a Game 7 Sunday in Denver.
Like you said, they're the defending champs, so it's going to be super tough. They're home, they're at the crib, their fans is crazy. It's going to be super loud, but I mean, I feel like as a competitor, it's like one of the best feelings in the world. I've never played a Game 7 on the road, but all my playoff experiences on the road has been like super fun because nobody's on your side. So I can just imagine how this game will be and like the fans. So I'm super pumped for it.
So you know Ant wants this, but he's only 22, right? He's only 22. KG was 28. KG was stepping into his kind of mental and physical peak at that moment. That was his MVP year. That was probably as good as Kevin Garnett was ever going to be when you combine how he could play physically with what he knew of the game already. He'd already been in the league like 10 years at that point because he came in, of course, straight from high school. Ant is in a different spot, right? Ant is in a different place in his career, but he does have that kind of it factor. So he can elevate his stature. This is where you do that. This is where you do that in Game 7s. I think he is ready for the moment, but that doesn't guarantee how he will perform. What he does in this game will tell us something about where he is right now. It won't necessarily tell us like where he's ever going to get to, but it'll tell us a lot about where he is, about where this team is right in this moment. So the opportunity here should not be taken lightly, should not be, you know, understated. This is an opportunity right now to win a Game 7, to get to the conference finals, to take that step, to feel like, hey, you win this game, you've got a good chance to go to the finals. You might be on a championship path. That's what's at stake here, and that is what he is feeling right now as a 22-year-old who is the unquestioned face and star of this team. So how he responds in that moment, how the Wolves can get him loose from all that Denver defense, from all those double teams that Denver's been throwing his way, especially in Denver, especially in Game 5, how they respond to that, we will learn a lot about that. And again, this is a series hard to predict. I have no idea what to expect on Sunday. I expect, you know, the thing that you should probably expect based on what you know of these teams, even with the way the series has gone, is that you will get their best effort, but you never know. We don't know what we... The only thing we know is that we all get to watch one more game of this series and at least one more game of this Timberwolves season.
Happy to talk Lynx basketball, WNBA, with Kent Youngblood from the Star Tribune. Nobody covers the Lynx or the league better than Kent from my perspective and hopefully yours too. Kent, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I am good. Really good opener for the Lynx. They win on the road Tuesday against Seattle. Final score, I think 83-70. Really turned it on in the second half. Couldn't have asked for a much better debut from their new players who really keyed that win. Home opener Friday again against Seattle. What do we take away from the first game, and then also kind of bigger picture, kind of what do we expect to see from a team that's kind of remade itself, not just with new players, but a little bit of a new identity?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. The opener in Seattle was between two teams that had radically different lineups than a year ago.
Yeah.
They both made very significant off-season moves. And so you never know exactly what you're going to get with that. And I thought that, at least in the opener, and we'll find out more tomorrow if that carries over, the Lynx had developed a chemistry with its new players more quickly than the Storm had.
Yeah, I think that, absolutely. Yeah.
I think that the combination of Ogumike, Jewel Lloyd, they're going to be good.
Yeah.
But the Lynx got to that kind of comfortability level more quickly. And I'm not exactly sure why. I think the fact that Williams and Smith played together in Chicago last year probably had something to do with it. I think that I think Collier is like the ideal star to build around because she's kind of generous in both basketball and non-basketball ways.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it.
Whereas, you know, Lloyd, I don't know anything about her as a person. I mean, but she's a volume scorer. She's a volunteer. And when you add a couple of big name players, it's Skylar Smith or Deegan Smith and Ogumike, that's going to affect kind of her dynamic on that team. So I think it just took them a little longer. Plus, there were some, I mean, Smith had a career day. Williams, I think, had 14 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds, and 5 steals.
Yeah.
Heidemann came off the bench for she had a bunch of assists and a bunch of steals. So, I mean, it couldn't have gone better for the new people that they brought on.
You wrote before the season started that they're maybe trying to change their identity a bit and kind of build around defense, a little bit similar to, maybe not to transition too much to NBA talk, but kind of, you know, the Wolves definitely have built their reputation and success this year around defense. How do you see that playing out? Do they have the pieces to do that quickly?
Well, it's not so much deciding to build an identity on defense as get back to a defensive identity.
Got it.
For all the star power they had in the championship runs, it was always defense, especially when fouls got here.
Yes.
They were a top four defensive team, I think, every year but one between 2011 and 2019. So last year was a kind of outlier, and they were horrible. They were 10th in the league in defensive efficiency. They were just not very good. And so I think that a lot of what they did in the offseason was built to address that. They got a kind of a rim protector in and Smith, who I think had four blocks the other night. And they got two guards who can defend on the perimeter. And when you can defend on ball on the perimeter, that makes a lot of things a lot easier. They weren't very good at that last year.
What do you think Cheryl Reeve, you know, head of basketball operations, personnel boss, has learned in that role over the years to help Cheryl Reeve, head coach? Like, how has she kind of set herself up to win with the kind of players that she wants, you know, as opposed to how they maybe have been forced to build rosters in the past, like 4 or 5 years?
I think that there was a, as they were kind of trying to transition from the fouls era to, I guess, the collar area era.
Yeah.
I think that she got caught a little bit in talent, valuing talent over personality and who they were bringing in. I think there were, you know, I don't want to rip anybody in particular, but I think they made some moves to bring in people who could play, but weren't good teammates and weren't good mixes with what the culture is here. And I think that lesson hit her hard. I don't know if she would talk about this, but I think that she decided that in order to be a successful team over the long term, you've got to bring in people who fit the culture as well as can play on the court.
Well,
and I think they've done that with this group. Heidemann and Williams and Smith all seem to kind of fit in well. I think they're all pretty good teammates. And you got to have a kind of, I mean, not just connectivity, but you kind of have to have a faith in your teammates to play great defense.
Yes.
And I think they have the potential to have that.
Well, and that was like the, you know, not unsaid, but maybe underappreciated part of their dynasty. They had four Hall of Famers for a good stretch of that, who also fit the culture, right? Like who weren't just great players, who basically defined that culture and enabled them to be, you know, that 7-year run when they won four titles, lost in the finals twice, went to the conference, or, you know, the semifinals, conference finals the other year. Mm-hmm. Like that, you know, that run like doesn't happen probably if you have one or the other. You do have to have both at a certain point, but maybe valuing one over the other as you're building is more important.
Well, you know, it was a little different team then. It was a little different league then too.
Yes.
But, you know, they didn't really ascend to the level of a championship team until Simone Augustus, who had been a career volume shooter her whole life, sat down with Reeve and agreed to play defense. She became their best perimeter defender.
Yeah.
And then you had Brunson, who is one of the greatest denial post defenders that I've ever covered. So, I mean, you have to have a willingness to do that. And they did it a little differently than I think this one will, but you got to have a willingness to defend. And, you know, it's amazing how many pro basketball players, both men and women, don't have that.
Yeah. There's a selflessness to defense that maybe doesn't come as easily when you've been a star all your life. And all these players in the league were, you know, have been stars at pretty much every level, at least until they get here. And then some of them are still stars, but not everybody can be a star. So that makes sense. You mentioned how the league used to be. You wrote in the lead up to the opener the other day about kind of where this league is going, just, you know, business is booming, ticket sales up everywhere. Some of it, maybe, you know, to varying degrees, we can discuss how much of it is the impact of this rookie class, the Caitlin Clark effect. Some people also would say, hey, this has been happening for a while. This is just kind of extra, you know, additional kind of jet fuel that's taking it to another level. But, you know, expansion, it's happening. They're going to go to 14 teams, it sounds like. And, you know, TV deals, the charter flight thing, like, this, the level of this league, they seem to be leveling up at a very fast pace right now.
Yeah, it's you know how the idea of kind of critical mass is like you build and build and build and all of a sudden it just kind of takes off.
A tipping point, yeah.
But it's, you know what's interesting is, you know, and I've joked with Reeve about this, is that there's this whole group of people, both fans and media, who are just like woke up and just said, hey, there's a women's league. You know, like when the Clark thing was building to, you know, insanity levels, and she declared for the draft and she's drafted. I mean, how many times did you read like analysts who have been covering basketball years saying they don't charter? What the hell's with that?
Right, right.
Or this is Clark's rookie salary. What's with that? You know, there's a whole group of people who never realized anything about the league who are now opining on it. And I find that somewhat amusing.
It is. But, yeah, it is.
As Reese said, there was a wave. Now it's a tsunami.
Right.
Lynx ticket sales are up 50%.
Which is,
they were already a top four league attendance.
Yeah.
2.3 million at its peak watched Clark commit 10 turnovers in her WNBA debut. I think it was like 200,000 viewers per turnover. So
yes. Go ahead.
Fouled for two quick fouls, and she went and tried that kind of complaining thing she did in college. It didn't really work that well, though. So
she played again Thursday. This is before after we recorded. So we'll save kind of the commentary on her second effort. We had 20 points, 10 turnovers, the double-double the hard way, not the double-double you want, but undeniable her impact just in terms of eyeballs, like you said, over 2 million viewers. The Lynx are opening up the upper part of Target Center for the two Indiana games here later this summer. And, you know, the league feeling the impact of that, these other rookies, but also just, you're right, the building that has been happening already. And I wonder if there's some kind of push-pull between the people who have been, you know, driving this thing for 10, 20 years, like a Cheryl Reeve, and then the kind of like the new guard coming in and how much credit they want to give to this influx versus the groundwork that's been laid.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Like, you know, the Lynx, I mean, the prices that the Lynx are going to get for tickets, you know, they didn't schedule the Maya Moore retirement on the day Clark was here for no reason. That's not a coincidence.
No.
But I mean, Washington's moving games with Indiana back to the bigger arena. Las Vegas is moving to a bigger arena for those games. I mean, Los Angeles is doing it.
Yeah, I saw
mean,
that.
It's, I think that when the Lynx finished up in Seattle the other night and were able to bus to the airport and get on a charter plane and fly home, rather than getting up at 6 the next morning and trying to get home over a 6-hour stretch,
mm-hmm.
we're like, yeah, we're okay with
right?
Because you know,
that's not cheap. What was like $25 million over the first 2 years of it?
Yeah, and you know, and I think during pre-season Zoom calls with league players, I think Brianna Stewart was asked, you know, in kind of veiled language, I mean, are you resentful of this? And she's like, no, we got to stick together. Anybody who brings interest to this league is going to help us all eventually. So why would anybody be resentful? Now, having said that, you don't think that everybody who's matching up against a Caitlin Clark or Angel Reese this year wants to come out and play?
Of course.
You know,
you got to earn it, right? They want them to earn it. They want to see, okay, you were great in college. Can you, you know, and we know you're a great player, but you got to earn it here. This is another level. That's what it is.
And I don't know if you saw the comments by Asia Wilson about Caitlin Clark.
I don't think I saw those. I saw a lot of the Taurasi stuff early, but yeah.
Well, it's just suggesting that a lot of Clark's popularity is a white-black thing.
Interesting, yeah.
And, you know, she came in the league, hadn't done anything, and got this massive Nike deal. Now, interestingly enough, very shortly after Wilson was talking about this, she got her own Nike
deal. Got her own shoe, yeah? Didn't she get her own shoe? Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that if you're a player, a coach, an executive, a fan of this league, anything that makes it more popular is a good thing.
Yeah. They want to celebrate her, but they also want to
Yeah,
They want
but
to. They want to.
I mean, I think that. I mean, well, but look at the NBA side of it. How often does a top five pick in the NBA come out and just start dominating from the start? I mean,
It's yeah.
even Ant was an okay player, but wasn't some kind
Right.
of dominant player early on.
Right.
So
It's
to assume that they were going to, that Clark was going to come in and, score 35 with, 15 assists on her first game is probably kind of silly.
right.
She's a great player. I mean, she's undeniably talented and can shoot and pass, but that doesn't mean her rookie season is not going to have some challenges.
No, and the people who defend her no matter what will have their, oh well, she had the turnovers because her teammates aren't ready for her passes yet. She's just on another level. Like there is a level of people who it's kind of like it's almost like a Taylor Swift fandom where they can do no wrong. Even if you don't really like one of Taylor Swift's songs, you can't really say it
Yeah.
because, so even if Caitlin Clark has an off game or a bad night, you got to explain it away with something else. But she's undeniably great for kind of boosting the league, and I'll be interested to see how she plays.
Royal Credit Union smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union smart checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
Let's maybe end with this. Circle back to the Lynx because, of course, they have their home opener Friday. The national profile isn't very high right now. I'm sure, that's been the case for some of these years, and they've maybe exceeded some of those national expectations. I mean, should this be at least be a playoff team in a league that, where 8 of the 12 teams still make it?
Absolutely. We have, I mean, I know that the league is expanding for sure, one team and reportedly two in the next couple of years. But still, when you consider that there's probably only 140 jobs in this league and how many, and it's a worldwide,
Yeah.
talent pool to draw from, it is a very difficult league to stick. I mean, it's like, speaking of what we were talking about earlier about how people have kind of just realized that there's a WNBA, I read a story out of LA that was like, how could LA waive its third round draft pick? Well,
That always happens.
that always
Always.
happens
That
because
always happens.
in this league, there isn't 15 roster spots to develop. And if you're not a top 10 pick, there's no guarantees you'll even make a roster.
Right.
And so, but and the talent level of the league has risen to the point where there are so many really good players, and there are a lot of good teams. So it's much more difficult to be a top four team
Yeah.
in this league now than it was 10 years ago.
Sure.
Having said that, I think that if the Lynx can stay healthy, especially in the backcourt,
Yep.
and its bench is more productive than last year, and that means Bridget Carlton hitting more threes and Zenda Lacini being what they hope she is. She kind of struggled a little bit in the opener. I think that if, I think that finishing on the top four is not outside of the realm of possibility. I think the
Okay.
goal would be to be a home advantage team in the first round.
Okay. That seems fair.
We have to, I mean, if Fee stays healthy and takes another step.
Yeah.
I mean, she was fourth in the league in scoring and
Yeah.
MVP voting last year. I
Yeah.
mean, she's a legitimate. If she doesn't get the press because she's maybe not as flashy or as showy or as demonstrative in many ways, she's a very, in her own way, kind of low key. But she's a superstar in this league. And
Yes.
any team that has one, Olympic level superstar, if they surround it with competent people who stay healthy, I think can expect to be a playoff team.
Expansion is San Francisco and Toronto, reportedly. Is that what we're thinking?
Yeah, San Francisco, I think for
For sure,
sure,
right?
already hired a GM, and I think they're going to call themselves the Valkyrie.
Really, we used to have a Valkyrie here in Minnesota. I can't remember
Yeah,
what league that was, but
and Toronto reportedly in 2026.
okay, those are two good markets. That's a good place to
So
be.
you're going to have 14 teams.
Yeah.
And I think with the the next thing will be try to grow rosters a little bit. But if you have rosters that are a little bigger and charter travel, that gives you and that means you could up the number of games per season very easily without putting any more strain on players. It's kind of hard to have a 40-game season in an Olympic year flying commercial. But if you have flexibility roster-wise, if you're, I mean, then back-to-backs don't become so killer, especially if they're within the same time zone, because you finish the game, get on a plane, and you're in the town that night.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. All of this kind of feeds into each other.
They'll grow the league to 16, or not 16, to 14, and they'll probably, with the next CBA, up the number of games. I think that at some point a 45-50 game season will not be out of the question, you know?
I think they'll stay with 8 playoff teams. It feels like that would be it's a good number.
A smart thing to do.
Yeah. Because right now
you see how the new teams, how they kind of structure the entry draft or the expansion draft. They'll set it up so that these teams can be competitive right away, or if they're going to be doormats to start, but it'll be interesting.
Maybe when they go to 14, you could do a play-in, because the NBA loves that play-in. You could do a 7-10 play-in now, and then
that's true. They had the kind of traditional 1-8-2-7 deal for years, and then they try to come up with that rigmarole that
with the double buys and the
buys and the single eliminations, and that was basically just for TV, and players were not interested in that. There's no need for a single elimination type of situation if the league is reaching the popularity it is. Nobody wants to see that. They want to see.
I agree.
What I'm thinking is maybe at some point the finals becomes a true 7 game. It's never been.
That'd be cool. Do you have an idea what kind of crowd they'll get for the opener Friday?
I bet it'll be 10-ish.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I think they averaged about 7 last year. So if they had 50% sales, that'd be in the 10-ish, 10 plus range.
Okay. I'll be interested to see that. I'll be interested to see what the season holds for them. Kind of a year of growth, they would probably hope, kind of establishing an identity, building around Collier and kind of going from there. Kent, appreciate it as always. Follow Kent Youngblood's coverage, Star Tribune and StarTribune.com from Friday's game and everything else. And I'm sure we'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you.
Great stuff from Kent. We'll see how the Lynx fare in Friday's home opener against Seattle. Already won the opener, like I said, Tuesday in Seattle. All the newcomers looking good in that game for the Lynx. We'll see what kind of season they can have. As far as newcomers go, there's none bigger than Caitlin Clark in the league. Like I said, she struggled in Indiana's home opener. They lost 102-66 to the New York Liberty. Liberty going to be one of the best teams in the league. Again, this year, Brianna Stewart had 31 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. She dominated that game. Caitlin Clark, 9 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, 5 fouls, 3 turnovers, shot just 1 of 7 from 3, 2 of 8 overall, made all of her free throws, but it is an adjustment. This is an adjustment period for the rookie. She is learning, just game 2 for her, but if you expected her to come into the league and just start putting up 30-point games, like Ken said, that's not necessarily how it works. This is an adjustment. She's got some things, obviously, to figure out. And, she's playing on a team that had the number 1 overall pick for a reason. They were not a good team last season. They've got some growing to do as well. Let's finish with the cooler and 2 things in there. Twins, like I said at the jump, dominated by the Yankees. Twins had been so good, 17-3 in their previous 20 games. Then they only score 1 run this whole series. No runs in the last 26 innings of this series after starting the series with a Ryan Jeffers home run in the first inning of the first game. Just dominated by the Yankees. Again, nothing new over the last two decades, but new from what we'd seen for the last few weeks from this team. And I mean, Patrick Roycey wrote about this team and kind of what is the real identity? What is the real Twins? Hoping for their sake, for the sake of this summer, that it was more, that this is more of an example of just a bad series. But you've kind of got two defined blocks of the year. The 20 games that started it when they couldn't hit and they were 7-13. The next 20 games when they could hit and they were 17-3. Now you started this third 20-game segment and they can't hit again. So what is the real identity of this team? Was this just a blip, or should we be concerned that you know, that the 20 games where they could hit was the outlier? That's what I will be watching as we go forward. Also in the cooler, PWHL Minnesota has a chance to advance tonight. Their season was on the brink. They were down 2-0 in the playoffs, won their last two, including Wednesday, 1-0 in double overtime. Game 5 tonight in Toronto. Home team has won all four games of this series. Minnesota hoping that changes. Trying to get a road win in a closeout do-or-die game, just like the Wolves will be on Sunday. So we will be watching to see what PWHL Minnesota does tonight as well. That will do it for me today. Be watching to see when that Wolves game is this weekend. Plenty coming up next week, of course, regardless of that outcome. Roycey on Monday. We'll see if Game 7 warrants a special episode, especially if it's an afternoon game. We'll see about that. But until then, I am Michael Rand. Have a great rest of your Friday. Back at it again in a couple days.